We want to welcome everyone today for DWC's quarterly stakeholder meeting. We are happy to have you with us so we can give you an update on what's happening here at the division. These meetings are intended to be informal and to encourage open communication between DWC staff and our system participants. We welcome your feedback and we'll do our best to answer any questions you may have. But we do ask to keep questions till the end, and we'll also try our best to answer those questions in the chat. Typical meeting reminders: please stay muted during the presentation so everyone can hear the speakers clearly. After the meeting, if you have any feedback or additional questions, please reach out to the external relations team. You can shoot us a message to our email box, and that we'll also put in the chat soon for reference. And with that, we'll get started with remarks from Commissioner Nelson.
Thanks, Dylan, and thanks everyone for being here with us this afternoon. Just a couple of things I wanted to touch on. First, thank you to everyone who attended our conference last month. I think it was a great turnout for doing it in person for the first time in a while. It was good to get to see a lot of you all, to visit with you, to hear what's going on. I thought the speakers did a fantastic job discussing the system, discussing some of the things on the horizon, and some of the things that are happening right now, things that we can improve. I do want to, I mentioned it there, but for those that haven't heard, we are going to hold it in person again next year. It's going to be in San Marcos at the same hotel. It's going to be in early September, not the week of Labor Day weekend. But start booking that right now. We had about 500 people attend last this time around. We're hoping to get those numbers up a little bit next year. Kara Mace, who's our head of or general counsel and over communications as well, she's going to talk a little bit more about some of the numbers from that conference in a little bit. So we do have a lot to go over. Like Dylan said, we're going to talk about reg studies or catastrophic incident response, audits, a few other things. You are going to see some new faces today from our various program areas. I think they have some good information to share, but go easy on them for a little bit. I think for some, this is going to be their first time talking on our quarterly meetings. One thing you may have seen is last month we do a quarterly newsletter. It's called the Texas Comp Update Newsletter. In that newsletter, we discussed a reorganization that our agency recently went under. This was just kind of a result of taking a look, taking a step back, seeing how we operate, and seeing where we could improve. A lot of the changes that we made are really internal changes that a lot of you won't, won't really see or notice, but a few things that you all will see externally that I want to touch on real quick. From your perspective, to start, we have designated doctor operations. They are going to be focused more on education of designated doctors and certified doctors, more focused on certification, performance reviews, the application process, just looking for ways we can improve, looking for ways we can educate our doctors in our system, our designated doctors in our system a little bit better. We recently put out a template for DD exam reports that came out of this group. It's something they've been working on for a while. So I think we're going to look for more things like that we can do to improve. And Santiago Calderon, who is on this call, I think he's over that program. We're excited for the ideas that are coming out of his shop. We also have a new, bigger healthcare provider outreach and return to work team. A lot of you know Amy Rich. That's under Amy Rich, so it's going to be well run and have a lot of good information coming out of there. She has a bigger team now. They're going to be able to focus more on outreach, more on programming, new on developing more materials. So that's another thing that we're excited about and that we think the healthcare provider community will see a lot of in the system as well. For workplace safety, that is now a standalone program area for us. That's really one of our core statutory missions that we have is to ensure that businesses are operating safely in Texas. And we do that through education, not through enforcement or true regulatory authority. Chris DeMura, who has been running that program as a director for several years, he is now the new deputy commissioner over that program area. He's got some good ideas. Also, just some things we want to continue to focus on. One stat he just showed me is that our OSHCON program, that's where we go out to businesses and we do a free safety consultation for employers. That saves businesses in Texas about $115 million a year. which is a pretty significant number when you think we're only doing about 2,000 of these consultations a year. So looking for ways to expand that, looking for ways to better promote the resources that we have is something he's going to be really focused on. We also have some business process enhancements. You guys know I've been talking about modernization, especially of our legacy modernization system Compass for a long time. We've created a team, thanks to some support from the legislature this past session, who is going to just be focused on that. We also have moved DD exam services under business processes to really refine and speed up some of our DD scheduling. And I know some of that we are constrained just by the nature of a dispute or who's making the request or what the doctor's schedules are, but they're going to take a fresh look at that and see where we can make some improvements on those that scheduling process. And the second to last thing I wanted to touch on is claims customer service. I think our claims customer service do a fantastic job. I think they're second to none. I think, frankly, a lot of state agencies could learn from our leadership team we have over that program on how to run a really well-run customer service group that provides genuine assistance. They're creating a new learning, development, and innovation program within CCS. And this is going to be learn, you know, they're going to develop learning opportunities, not just for our internal staff, but for external parties as well. Whether that's a new workers' comp 101 for people just new into the system can watch a video on and learn from. Or if that's, you know, getting more involved in our comp courses, which offer free continuing education credits, they're going to be focused on ways that they can better inform all of our system participants and our staff internally. You know, we're always trying to learn. We always have new staff coming on. So how do we get them up to speed on the complexities of the system? That's going to be what they're focused on. They've done a great job of that historically. We're just kind of putting a more centralized focus on that. And last but not least, Mary Landrum, who most of you know, she's been with us for a long time. She has been promoted to Deputy Commissioner of Operations. This is a new position, really a whole new program that we created to really focus on things that we're doing internally. Where can we get better in our processes and our procedures? Is there stuff with our contracting or with our workflows, how we have approval processes, all that sort of day-to-day logistics stuff, which Mary excels at. She's going to be over that program. We're still building it out, but we are excited to have her in this role. All of these changes just kind of went into true effect in September, with the real goal of, you know, operating more efficiently, to looking at what our core missions are that the legislature sets out for us, and focusing on those core missions, and then how can we support our staff and our stakeholders better with the resources that we have. So we're excited about it. We hope over the coming months that you all start to see some of those changes you see as this gets implemented and we start developing some of these items. But we're excited about it. Hope y'all are too. And I'll save a few things for closing, but with that, I'll turn it over to Mary.
Glad to have so many of you joining us today. So as Commissioner Nelson mentioned, my name is Mary Landrum. I am the Deputy Commissioner of Operations. And as a result of this reorganization that we just went through, I just wanted to let you know that the changes have had a positive impact on my group. But while I no longer oversee workplace safety, I do continue to lead the health side of the organization. And with that, before I hand things over to the team for an update, I'd like to take a moment to introduce to you a couple of folks. First, Sean Kitterman, our newest team member. He's just 13 days in and already making an impact. Sean joins us as Director of Operations, bringing with him 24 years of state experience in state government. Most recently, he was with the Attorney General's office, though, just to clarify, he's not an attorney. Sean, would you like to say a quick hello so that folks can put a face to your name? I see none. There you go. Is this better, Kate? Yes? Okay. All right. Hopefully y'all heard all of that, but I'm not going to repeat myself again. But Sean, if you're available, if you want to say just a quick hello so that they can put a face to the name, please. Not sure if Sean's there. Okay, we'll give him a second. Probably not. Okay. Second, I'd like to introduce to you Jennifer Self, who serves as the manager for the Office of the Medical Advisor. Jennifer joined us in March as the OMAS nurse investigator, coming from the Texas Medical Board. Jennifer quickly got up to speed and has done an outstanding job in a very short period of time. And I'm about to turn it over to her for the update, and you're going to see all the great things that she has just done in such a short period of time. So with that, Jennifer.
Hi, thank you so
There you are.
much. Good afternoon. And as Mary said, I'm Jennifer and I manage the Office of the Medical Advisor and the Healthcare Quality Review. So diving right in, this is what's kind of been going on in our department over the last quarter. As some of you maybe already know, we have completed the AMA 6th edition study guides. All 370 case studies were completed and have moved to the phase two. They're at the REG, which is the Research Evaluation Group. We estimated completion time sometime in 2026. Next slide, please. I'm proud to say OMA has completed the gabapentin plan-based audit. This has been ongoing for a while due to changes inside the department and a recent reorganization. 50 cases were reviewed related to prescribing gabapentin, pregabalin, and opioids simultaneously. Beginning this year, we will be posting the executive summary to the public with the findings of these reviews. Next slide. Additionally, this calendar year, Dr. Owen, our medical advisor, has selected the DD plan-based audit. This audit ensures that additional testing and referral ordered by designated doctors were medically necessary and appropriately documented. We posted for comment on October 6th for 2 weeks and received a moderate amount of feedback. More to come on that next year, and this will be posted externally like our previous audits. Next audit, next slide. Speaking of next year, Dr. Owen has been researching our next 2026 annual audit plan, and we have currently been preparing some topics, and as soon as that's determined, we'll be posting for public comment. Next slide. This year, we had the pleasure of working with Tammy Campion's team performing the healthcare provider PBO assessment. This audit completed 385 assessments. Our department, with the help of MQRP members, reviewed the DWIC 73s for return to work. And as of today, 145 were closed as acceptable, and 240 are pending additional information from providers. Next slide, please. Finally, we are always looking for designated doctors that would like to be an MQR member. So if you or anyone you know are interested, please go to the website and select the Office of the Medical Advisor. And at the bottom is where you can start the application process. You do not need to be a designated doctor to do this. However, it is preferred. If you have any questions regarding the process or what that entails, I would love to visit with you. And my contact information is on the website for OMA as well. And I will put my contact information in the chat as well. That's all I have for OMA. And I'll turn it over to Amy Rich to discuss the healthcare provider and return to work.
Thank you, Jennifer. Yes, I have a healthcare provider and return to work outreach. Our primary target audience is our healthcare providers, but we also have the return to work side where we try to reach all employers in Texas and talk about return to work. We have the Comp Connection phone line. We have the live events that we have every year, and we're planning 2026 right now. And so we're in touch with what the healthcare providers and the carriers, frankly, are talking about as far as it comes to medical billing and rule changes. So next slide, please. This is going to just be a brief reminder to system participants that one of our largest rule changes was in the designated doctor and workers' comp specific exams. We changed after many years of having the same rules in place for a long time, which we always got questions on. We hope that these new rules are more simple for billing and reimbursement. And not unusual, we're still getting some feedback from system participants. So just a reminder that the rules for a designated doctor, required medical exam doctors, RME doctors, treating doctors, and referred doctors have all changed. They all have their own rule for maximum medical improvement and impairment rating and the like, those types of exams. So each one of those four rules represents one of those roles. The things that we hear about are the designated doctors using or treating doctors are still using the old modifiers. We have great resources out on our website to tell you which modifiers have been deleted and which ones are being used currently. Specifically, that SP modifier in that first bullet is still getting confused with our change to the special exam fees for designated doctors. When they examine certain diagnoses, they get an extra fee. Not to be confused with the SP from previous, where they incorporated testing results from other doctors. So that's one area that we're focused in on. The V1 and V2 are for treating doctor exam types. Those are gone. So the treating doctors have to choose between V3 through 5. So if you want information, my last slide is going to give you resources on which modifiers are still in place. The last bullet is about assignment numbers. You healthcare providers, designated doctors, or testing doctors need to have assignment numbers in that box 23 on your CMS 1500. That's the pre-authorization field. You could risk having your bill returned, denied, going into medical fee dispute resolution. So the assignment number comes from us. It's on the bottom of your 32. So place that in your on your bill if you're a designated doctor. And if you're sending your patient out for testing, those testing providers have to have it on their bill. So that's up to you to get it to them. There's great handouts I'm going to get to in that third slide. So you can advance the slide now. Also, just getting the fee right. Designated doctors, treating doctors, and the like need to pay attention to the exam fees. We have those posted on our website. So they're going to change each year. They're going to be based on the Medicare Economic Index. So that means it could go up. So we need to bill the current year's fees, and then the carriers are supposed to pay those fees, and you're supposed to bill those fees. So just make sure you're looking at the exam fees for each year. So in January, expect a change in your MMI exams, your impairment rating, your extent of injury. All of those will have new amounts. So change your charge masters for next year. And on the carrier side, pay the MAR, which is the maximum allowable reimbursement. Again, it changes every calendar year. So if you can advance from there, these are our resources. Next year, we are planning to do new boot camps. We're going to include this topic so we can talk about the new rates. But the original video is out there, but just know when you're watching the original video, we're talking about 2024 rates. So keep that in mind. We will be posting the new rates when we conduct the new training in 2026. There's also the slides from that video, some handouts, some cheat sheets, and also the handout that you can send to your testing providers. Say you're sending out for neuropsych testing or an MRI or other types of diagnostics, you send that. Second to the last bullet with them and the assignment number. The exam fees are on our conversion factor page. So that last link is to the exam fees, and we'll have column for the new rate starting in 2026. So call us at Comp Connection if you have questions. We want to try to keep you out of medical fee dispute resolution and billing correctly and processing your bills on time. So thank you so much. Call us if you have concerns about designated doctor and billing and reimbursement in that area. Thank you so much. I'll turn it over to Santiago now.
Hey, hello out there. Good afternoon. I'm Santiago Calderon. I'm your Director of Designated Doctor Operations, or DDO around here. Please allow me to share some DDO news and updates. Next slide, please. Okay, I'm happy to introduce or to reintroduce our DD report templates. As part of DWC's ongoing efforts to improve the DD program, we developed report templates. These templates provide a standardized approach to organizing the narrative that will assist the DD in meeting the narrative report requirements. While these templates are not required, DWC strongly encourages their use. And if you can see right here in the slide here, these are the templates that are available for you to download. We have a general template, we have an MMI template, an IR template, an extent of injury, a disability, a return to work SIBS, and one for other similar issues. So a total of 8 templates are out there for your use. Next slide, please. This is our homepage, and the DD homepage is where you can find these templates by the exam type that we just mentioned. And you can also find the DD narrative report template video. The templates include the 8 that we spoke of, but from this page, you're going to want to click the template to download the template that you want. You can click the link to the video as well. It's a short 13-minute video that gives really good instructions on how to apply these templates, specifically for the general template, the MMI template, the IR template, and the extent of injury template. Next slide, please. Okay, this slide here covers the trainings that we have for the rest of the year. There is an in-person DD 101 workshop this Friday for you DDs out there. It's still not too late to register. If you're interested in coming in and kind of touching up on some of your skills, now's a good opportunity. Again, that's this Friday, October 24th, here at the Barbara Jordan Building. A few weeks later, you'll see that we have our last DD and certifying doctor required certification training of the year. So this is our last one of the year. And so that'll be Friday, November 7th, and Saturday, November 8th. And our last training of the year is a webinar. It's our extent of entry webinar, and that'll be on Friday, November 14th. Next slide, please. And right here, here's some helpful web pages and email addresses. Follow the appropriate link for the DD program homepage, the DWC training calendar, the DD narrative report templates video, and the DD narrative report requirements. And then there's some helpful email addresses that you're encouraged to use should you have any questions about any type of scheduling or help if you need help getting records. That's it for me. Next up is Tammy Campion. She's our Deputy Commissioner of Business Process. Tammy, I turn it over to you.
Thank you, Santiago. Good afternoon, everybody. Like Santiago said, I'm Tammy Campion and I'm the Deputy Commissioner for Business Process. Earlier, the Commissioner mentioned some internal reorganization, and part of that reorganization moved processing requests for designated doctor exams and requests for change of treating doctors to Business Process Designated Doctor Exam Services led by Martha Luebeno. And Martha will be providing an update on this in a few minutes. Before I begin my presentation, I did want to mention to all the carrier representatives attending that we are aware of the intermittent connectivity issues we're having with our SFTP accounts today, and we have our IT staff working to resolve those as quickly as possible. Next slide, please. Today, I'm going to be sharing the key findings from the Research and Evaluation Group's 2025 Income Benefits Report. Next slide. This report analyzed the amount of income benefits received by injured employees. The data for the analysis are from DWC's Claim and Impairment Rating Database and the Texas Workforce Commission's Unemployment Insurance Database. The study includes injured employees who received benefits in injury years 2015 to 2022 and breaks each benefit type into categories such as injury year, industry, and age. As you can see on the slide, the benefits covered are temporary income benefits, impairment income benefits, supplemental income benefits, lifetime income benefits, and death benefits. A link to the definition for each of these benefit types will be dropped in the chat, so we don't have to cover that today. I will be focusing the presentation on the income benefit replacement rates from the study. One note, when you go out and review the full report, changes in tax regulation in 2018 that increased employee after-tax earnings affected all benefit types except supplemental income benefits, decreasing the income replacement rates, but those replacement rates have since returned to pre-2018 levels. Next slide. So what is an income replacement rate? The income replacement rate is the percentage of an injured employee's pre-injury wages that are replaced by an income benefit. It is calculated by dividing the amount of income benefits paid to an injured employee by the amount of after-tax wages that they would have earned had they not been injured. Temporary income benefits. This benefit is 70% of the employee's average weekly wage. And depending on the employee's hourly rate, that benefit could be 75%. The income replacement rate for this benefit was 82% for 2015 and 80% for 2022, a 2% decrease. Next slide. Impairment income benefits. This benefit is 70% of an employee's average weekly wage. The income replacement rate for this benefit was 77% for 2015 and 78% for 2022, a 1% increase. Next slide. Supplemental income benefits. This benefit is 80% of the difference between 80% of the employee's average weekly wage and the average weekly wage after their injury, limited to 70% of the state average weekly wage. The income replacement rate for this benefit was 73% for 2015 and 75% for 2022, a 2% increase. Next slide. Lifetime income benefits. The lifetime income benefit amount is 75% of an injured employee's average weekly wage with a 3% increase each year. The replacement rate calculation for injured employees receiving these benefits are different from the benefits we've already covered. For these benefits, the maximum benefit amount only applies to the first year of benefits. Given the additional complexities and the relatively low number of recipients, this section is limited to an overall replacement rate. So the overall average replacement rate from 2015 through 2022 was 77%. Next slide. Death benefits. Death benefits are 75% of the deceased employee's average weekly wage, and the beneficiary may receive those benefits for life if certain conditions are met. The replacement rate for beneficiaries should be viewed with caution because of the thankfully very small population size. The overall average replacement rate for 2015 through 2022 was 83%. Next slide. To view the full report, you can scan the QR code on the screen. I encourage you to take some time to view the full report. I just, again, focused on the income replacement rates, but the report is full of information about income benefits in the Texas Workers' Compensation system. Thank you for your time this afternoon, and I will turn the presentation over to Martha Luevano, Director of Enterprise Automation Services.
Thank you, Tammy. Good afternoon, everybody. I hope everybody's having a good day. So before I get started with my presentation, I'd like to follow up on Amy Rich's reminder to healthcare providers about billing for DD assignment numbers. And I have a reminder of my own for carriers. So for medical state reporting, we ask carriers, please start reporting the designated doctor order assignment number in medical state reporting, and that goes in the treatment authorization number field. So we need that information in order to accurately report on DD referrals for additional testing and evaluation, such as the scenarios that Amy was talking about. So I just wanted to mention that real quick because Amy said her part, so I figured I'd do mine. All right, next slide. Okay, for healthcare provider PBO, this is just an update on healthcare provider PBO. This past Monday was the deadline for the final rebuttals to be submitted for the Form 73. So the 69 portion of the assessment has already been completed, and all the final tier ratings have already been sent to healthcare providers. For the 73, that assessment is ongoing. There are some rebuttals that need to be referred over to OMA, which are rebuttals to negative findings for the off-work portion of the 73. So OMA's going to do their analysis. We'll get those findings back, and then we'll send out the final or the final results for the DWIC 73 portion of it. Now, the overall results for both portions of the healthcare provider PBO will be published in November. Next slide. Okay, so you heard Commissioner and also Tammy mention DD exam services are now under Enterprise Automation Services, and that move made a whole lot of sense. You know, PBO is now under this department. A lot of the data that we're collecting in the 32 process in TEXCOM also relates to healthcare provider PBO. So it did make sense for us to go and manage DD. ES, at least for the administrative part of processing the 32. And in addition, we also process the 53s. So now that DDES reports Enterprise Automation Services, we have the opportunity to, you know, refine the process, take a look at the data, and start maybe, you know, looking at ways to improve the process. But for right now, there are no changes. It should be transparent to stakeholders. You're going to continue to file your forms the way you're filing them, fax, email. It's just business as usual. Now, if you do have any questions, please contact either Joy or myself if you do have questions. That is all I have for my update. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Martha. Hey, y'all, I'm Kara. Just a quick communications update for me today. First slide, please. Conference recap. So, thanks to everybody who came to this year's conference. On the slide, you can see we had a lot of attendees, over 500, so pretty good turnout. A lot of really good exhibits and some great presentations. And we were really glad to get back to the in-person format. So thanks to everybody who attended and contributed to the success of the conference. Next slide, please. We enjoyed it so much, we went on and booked it for next year. So go ahead and mark your calendars. Next year's conference is September 1st and 2nd. Same great location in San Marcos, but we'll have some new session topics and speakers. You can go to the website and sign up for emails and follow us on social media to get updates. Next slide, please. So we have a new media resources portal. We just created this portal on our website to easily find important DWC data, reports, make a media request, or make a request for open records. This page and the new form and process streamlines our media request process so that we can get information to you as quickly as possible, hopefully get what you're looking for. And we've got a QR code there where you can find this page. We've also made a little bit of an update to the website where we've got a new tag there in the ribbon for media and general public information requests. We've made just a little facelift. We're going to continue to make some little changes like that to the site to keep it fresh and easy to use. So hopefully, this will make making media requests and getting that kind of information a lot easier. And that is the update for me. I'm going to turn it over to Connor.
Thank you, Kate. Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Connor Ambrosini. I'm the lead attorney in enforcement. Next slide, please. So just kind of give you an update on what we've been doing over here for fiscal year 2025. We received a little over 2,000 complaints. We closed about 1,900. Of those 1,900 complaints that were closed, a little over half of those were not confirmed. About 476 of them were confirmed, and then those are the ones that come to my shop in enforcement that we then prosecute. Next slide, please. Of the complaints that we received, as you can see here in this chart, I'm not going to go through all the numbers, but the majority of the complaints that we received were against insurance carriers for communication violations, indemnity benefit violations, and medical benefit violations. Next slide, please. Also, in fiscal year 2025, we completed many audits this year, death benefit audits. 18 of them were completed for TIBS audits, 22, and for medical bill processing, 19. Next slide, please. So, after a complaint is filed within our system, The money that was transferred between system participants was about 2.4 million. About 316,000 of that was to injured employees or beneficiaries after LIBS and death benefit audits. And I will be going into death benefit audits later in my portion of this slides. Next slide, please. Regarding the enforcement cases of those cases that were confirmed by ANI that come to us, we closed 572 of them in fiscal year 2025 with action, and we currently have 171 pending as of October 2nd. Next slide, please. Of the complaints that we did close, 446 of them were with insurance carriers. As you can see, 135 with healthcare providers and 22 with other, and other would be employers, injured employees, attorneys, et cetera. Next slide, please. Currently, the case is pending. As I said, we have about 171 of them. The vast majority of them are pending with insurance carriers, with 151, 16 with healthcare providers, and 4 with other. Next slide, please. Based on the disposition type for the closed cases, majority of cases that we closed were with DWC orders, consent orders, or final orders. The majority of those were with insurance carriers, as you can see. The next would be warning letters, pretty similar between healthcare providers and insurance carriers for the warning letter amounts, 95 to 116, and a very small amount for other closures, and that includes like education letters, closed with no action, or opened in error cases. Next slide, please. So this is our enforcement orders on our DWC website. It's at the very bottom of the website. So if you click on it and you have to go all the way down, and it's on the right. That'll include all the orders that have been signed by the commissioner and that are available to be viewed to the public. Next slide, please. Moving on to the fraud cases within the fraud department at CNI. They received over 1,600 referrals in 2025, fiscal year 2025. They opened 49 cases, they closed 43, and they had 4 cases indicted here in Travis County. And the restitution amounts from those 4 cases were about $101,500. Next slide, please. And as I said, the $101,500 amounts, that was for these 4 cases here. 2 of them were against claimants, one was against a beneficiary, and one was against an employer. Next slide, please. So as I mentioned earlier, we're going to be going over death benefits and death benefit audits. Those are very serious violations that we take a lot of time with here in my department. We entered into 26 consent orders involving death benefits in fiscal year 2025. 24 of them were for audits. Of those 24 audits, the non-compliance rate ranged from about 14% to 75%. So say if we examined 8 claims in a death benefit audit, sometimes up to 6 of those could have been non-compliant. That means they were inaccurately paying death benefits, not timely paying death benefits. So pretty serious. We consider those as we go through investigating these. And as you can see at the last bullet point there, the average penalty assessed for these 24 death benefit audits was $38,992. So pretty large chunk of money. And I know from the cases that I did, the actual highest number was way higher than that. So there are some pretty serious penalties for these late death benefit audits. Next slide, please. And this is just kind of a timeline from fiscal year 22 to 25, kind of the cases that we closed with a sanction. So that means the DWC order. As you can see, the death benefit orders is almost always a very small fraction of the total cases that we close since 22 to 23 to 24, and then now into 25. Next slide, please. So as I mentioned earlier, we resolved 572 cases this year with an action. Only 22 of those were for death benefits. That includes the 24 that were for audits. So about 5% of the total cases that we closed with action accounted for 43% of the total penalties assessed in fiscal year 25. So very large percentage of the penalties we assess are for death benefits. Vast majority of those are for audits. So that's something that we'd like you all to consider as we go forward with these. Next slide, please. On an unrelated note to everything else, we did receive some a notice from an assistant participant. I believe it was an attorney that discussing the carrier scorecards. They used to reflect all the complaints that were received, regardless of what the outcome was. So if it was not confirmed, it would still show up. Now it's just only reflecting the confirmed complaints. So we wanted to say thank you for bringing that to our attention. Next slide, please. Yes, and as my name is not Dan LeBrier, he is the Deputy Commissioner for Complaints and Investigations. So if you have any complaints with my presentation, please email him after I'm done speaking. But other than that, that is it. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you, Connor. Let me turn my camera on. Sorry, I'm having issues with my camera, everyone. Hopefully, you can hear me. My name is Teresa Johnson, and I am the Director of Outreach and Claim Services. Or you may be more familiar. Let me see. Thank you for that, Dylan. There I am. Okay. Sorry. Good afternoon. I'm Teresa Johnson, and I'm the Director of Outreach and Claim Services team, or some of you may be more familiar with the Single Point of Contact team. Today, I'll provide a brief overview of our agency's response to catastrophic incidents over the past year with a focus on key communication strategies. Let's begin by looking at a few factors that influenced our response and shaped our approach. Next slide, please. So, a catastrophic incident refers to any event that results in or has the potential to result in multiple injuries, fatalities, or widespread illness. These are high-impact situations that often require immediate response and coordinated response efforts. Some examples include natural disasters such as hurricanes or floods, accidental events such as industrial explosions or chemical spills, and intentional acts like active shooter attacks. So, understanding what qualifies as a critical incident helps us prepare, respond effectively, and ensure the safety and well-being of everyone involved. Next slide, please. Having a clear and proactive plan in place for managing catastrophic incidents or complex claim situations is essential, not just for internal coordination, but for building trust and transparency with all parties involved. First, it promotes transparency and collaboration. When everyone understands the process and expectations, it reduces confusion and fosters cooperation between injured employees, employers, insurance carriers, and other system participants. Second, a well-structured plan can reduce the need for formal dispute resolution. When communication is clear and timely, many issues can be resolved informally before they escalate. It also helps ensure regulatory compliance, which is especially important in high-visibility cases. Most importantly, having a plan in place enables faster recovery for injured employees and more efficient claims processing, which benefits everyone involved. Ultimately, it's about being prepared, responsive, and aligned so we can support people when they need it most. Next slide, please. The DWC response framework is designed to ensure a coordinated, timely, and effective response when catastrophic incidents occur. The first step is to establish a checklist. This ensures consistency and that no key steps are missed during the initial response. We also define clear procedures and maintain a resource list so that we can act quickly and efficiently, even in high-pressure situations. One of the first operational steps is to verify coverage, confirming which claims are involved and ensuring benefits can be administered without delay. If a resource center is activated, we deploy staff to provide on-site support and guidance to affected individuals. A single point of contact is assigned to manage communication and coordination for all claims related to the incident, which helps streamline the process and reduce confusion. Finally, we initiate a claims tracker to monitor progress, identify trends, and ensure timely follow-up. This framework helps us stay organized, responsive, and focused on supporting injured employees and their families. Next slide, please. As of now, DWC is actively tracking six catastrophic incidents across the state. These include two natural disasters, two active shooter events at schools, one industrial explosion, and one scaffolding collapse. Each of these claims, or each of these incidents involves multiple claims and a coordinated response. And to manage communication and ensure consistency, we have two dedicated single points of contact that manage these critical incidents. One single point of contact is assigned to each incident, and they're responsible for facilitating outreach to injured employees, potential beneficiaries, and communicating with insurance carriers. By having one point of contact, we ensure that all claims are being tracked and any concerns are addressed appropriately. This structure allows us to stay responsive and organized, even as we manage complex claims simultaneously. Next slide. As we move forward, there are three key areas we'll continue to strengthen our response efforts. First, we'll prioritize early communication with insurance carriers and system participants. Timely outreach helps set expectations, it reduces confusion, and ensures that claims are handled efficiently from the start. Second, we're working to strengthen engagement with local, state, and federal agencies. These partnerships are critical during large-scale incidents, and ongoing collaboration helps us align resources and share information more effectively. Lastly, we want to reinforce the importance of having a response plan in place. Whether it's a checklist, a communication protocol, or a designated single point of contact, being prepared makes all the difference in how quickly and effectively we can respond. By staying proactive, connected, and prepared, we can continue to support injured employees and their families when it matters most. Thank you for your time today. I'll be happy to answer any questions before I hand it back over to Commissioner Nelson. Next slide, Dylan. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Teresa. Before I get into my closing, I do want to just give Sean Kitterman a chance to introduce himself. I think he was having some technical difficulties. He's our new director of operations who's going to be working very closely with Mary on their projects. Sean Young.
Hello, everyone. I apologize for the technical difficulties, but we've gotten a lot of good information today, and I look forward to working with Mary to support everyone here.
All right, thanks, Sean. So we got a lot of good information here, like Sean just said. I did just kind of want to reinforce a couple things here. First, with the catastrophic response plan that we put in place, it's been a really big benefit to us. Like Teresa said, we have currently six incidents that we are continuing to monitor that we responded to. It's something that we really just kind of developed over the past, I don't know, 2 years now, a year and a half at this point, but it's been a big help. And I know you all have a lot of contingency plans in place, but I think it's something that everyone could benefit from. If, for you, the carers out there, if one of your, one of your employers had some sort of catastrophic incident, it's nice to just be able to look at a checklist, press go, and, get things in place rather than having to be reactive. You can be much more proactive. So that's something that's been really helpful for us. Also, on the carrier scorecard changes that Connor mentioned, I hope you all start to notice that difference. What we were seeing is that we had a lot of unconfirmed complaints. Not a lot. We had some unconfirmed complaints that were making their way onto these scorecards. And these were probably more gripes than complaints. Complaints of an actual violation. So when that was brought to our attention, it was a very good point someone raised, and we did make that change. So hopefully that's a little more true to what's going on in our system. And I hope you guys start noticing the complaints kind of coming down off your scorecards. Kara did mention the media response portal. And I realize most people on this call are not media, but I do think it's a very helpful place to just find good sources of information on what we have, good sources of data, good sources on the basics of comp. It's easy to submit a public information request. That's what you're looking for. So I know you guys probably won't be submitting questions through the media portal, but it's a good place to just go see a collection of what we do have. Lastly, like I said when we started, we have a good group of new people who you're going to start seeing more in these presentations. They work very closely on the projects that they talk about, and I think it's good for them to be able to explain from their perspective what's going on in the system. So I hope you guys enjoyed seeing a couple new faces. The last thing, Dylan started this off by saying we want this to be informative, we want this to be collaborative, and we do. I was recently at a panel at a conference. One of the questions was, as regulators, what do you wish industry members know about their impact on the industry or your daily operations? What I responded to that is I want system participants to know we are partners in this. We don't have to, and I don't think we do, have an adversarial sort of relationship. We value your feedback. We need to know what's going on. Us, like anyone, but probably especially regulators, we can get a little tunnel vision. We don't always know what is good, what's really going on out there in the system. So if you all have things that you see need to be addressed, that you want changed, bring it to our attention. We don't need to, it doesn't need to be a huge formal process. You can call Kate, call me, call anyone who's on this. Just talk it through with them. We might not always agree. We might not always put the change in that you're looking for, but we need to know what's going on. We want to work with you. We want to be partners. So please, keep that in mind as things are coming up. And the last thing, we also like to hear what, if we're making a change that works, that you guys see is beneficial, it's good to hear about that. If we put out a rule that you think is worthwhile, a positive comment on that rule does go a long way because sometimes someone else is opposing that. And if we can have a positive comment in there, it does help bolster the justification for implementing that rule. So, just keep that in mind as we do things. If you like something, let us know. And maybe there's other areas we can institute a change like that as well. So I'll open it up for questions or comments or feedback. Okay, well, y'all just email me all that feedback, okay? Well, appreciate everyone's time. We're giving you a little bit of time back, but I hope you guys enjoy your afternoon.